Disturbing Interest is a horrible histories, terrible mysteries podcast. The past and, unfortunately, the present are very explicit places. Listener discretion is advised.
If you like Disturbing Interests, please remember to rate us and leave a comment. We appreciate you spreading the word. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Tell your priest at confession. Tell it to your parole officer. Tell a rival gang member. Just shout it into the wind and let the pigeons carry our voices into the void. Remember, your likes and shares are crucial to our survival.
Welcome back to Disturbing Interest, everyone. I am Regina King, your evil queen, and sitting next to me is my ever-lovely partner.
Hello, I'm Lynn, your docent of darkness.
I love that you actually just waved.
I was like, hi! I've missed you all! I'm sorry we took a longer break than we normally do. So Regina's still dealing with the back of heavy medication.
Yes.
And we've been having a little work done in the house, a little remodeling that was long overdue. And guess what, you guys? I have a portal to hell in my stairwell.
She really does. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Check Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I will post some photos of what we found in our stairwell. It's, I'm pretty sure that, like, it's maybe a scene from Saw could take place in there.
Well, I sent it to a coworker of mine because it was so unbelievable.
It's a
hellhole. What he asked was, did you find a skeleton?
No, and I was really actually hoping to find D.B. Cooper's missing money.
That'd be nice.
In there, and I didn't, sadly. We found rubble. We found, so here's a cool fact about pre-code building. So for all y'all libertarian bros that are like, yeah, the government should have any restrictions on anything, it stifles growth, go fuck yourself, because I love building codes. Oh my God, I love them so hard. Do you realize what was used as a substitute for the nice insulation we have today back in the 1920s?
Razors?
No, that might have been slightly safer than what was actually in our walls.
Oh God.
Sawdust.
Oh
sawdust.
My God, you had sawdust?
We had a kindling. Yeah, guess what's holding up our home? Kindling. And so the reason we had this done was there's a little deck in front of our house where the flashings had gotten rotten, and it's right behind where this really awkward, shitty built-in bookcase that was put into our house when the house flippers flipped it in the 1980s. And unbeknownst to us, dribbling down the wall behind it for some time was water. So all those books are mildewed and now off to the rubbish. So yeah, it's good times. There was a... I'm like, what's trapped behind those books? God only knows. They took the bookcase out of the wall, and then they kind of, you know, okay, we had to clear out all this dead wood. And boom, there's this weird little triangular, like, structure. Room? Hellhole? It's a hellhole.
It's a hellhole.
There's an oubliette under
Perfect.
This little deck in the front yard in our stairwell. And people are like, well, why didn't you turn it into a closet? And I'm like, because demons? No, also because it's awkward, it's filled with rubble, and no, I would have to go through my stairs. It was magical, and when they opened it up, it smelled like there was a body in there. I was like, damn, we could have started a mushroom farm, a psychedelic mushroom farm in our hellhole, but we didn't. We just...
I mean, I hear they're about to make it rec legal in Washington.
Well, there you go. Damn, I missed out on a business opportunity.
You really did.
Whatever you were sniffing in there would have certainly sent you on a trip of a lifetime.
Wow.
So anyway, it's all cleaned out. There are actual joists that will hold up the front of my house, and, you know, in the event of an earthquake or a big truck driving past, it, you know, we'll be all right. And
That's
they
very
drywalled
exciting.
It. So we've had to sort of block off one section. They haven't finished yet. Every night when we let the cats out of the bedroom after they're gone, so that Kesu does not tunnel in through this little gap that's still there and go full Fortunato and just wall her own ass up, like, you know, like an Edgar Allan Poe story.
She really would.
Oh, yeah. My cat makes incredibly bad life choices. But yeah, so that's one of the reasons that we're a bit late. We had to deal with the hellhole in my stairwell.
And unfortunately, we lost a member of the pod family.
We did. That was last weekend. So Kevin, horrible, horrible Kevin, has gone back to hell where he came from. Kev, it turns out, was full of cancer. and had been really hiding it very well because...
He was kind of cancer.
He was. And it wasn't like he was interactive in a, hey, let's cuddle way. He was in a, I'm going to bite you if you poke me one more time kind of way. So it wasn't like I was, you know, hugging
him.
Squeezing
him a lot.
It wasn't like, yeah, he was a playful, interactive member. He was a prisoner. He was a hostage. He was basically a hostage.
I think you were the hostage in that situation.
Yeah, I don't know. There was, you know, but he, yeah, he, unfortunately, we had to have him put to sleep last week. And I, he's currently frozen. He's in cryostasis at the vet clinic's freezer. And I will go pick him up next week and dig a big hole. Oh, I can't, actually, because, sorry, in the process of dealing with the hell hole and the other stuff on the outside of the house, they knocked a giant tree down in my backyard. So that was fun. Basically like Poltergeist. I'm pretty much ready for a swimming pool pit full of angry animated skeletons to just happen to me.
I thought that they actually used a real skeleton in that movie, and that's...
Oh, I don't know.
I think they did. In fact, I'm going to fact check that and put it on Twitter. Either that, somebody
maybe
email
we
us,
should
please.
Just do a whole episode on Poltergeist and other movies with tragedy.
Ooh, I like that idea.
All right, so coming soon, maybe for like Halloween, we do a scary movies.
I don't know, or maybe when you do the murder ballads, I can do movies that kill, or movies that had actual bodies and
right,
stuff in it.
There you go.
Because I think I know of three off the top of my head.
Nice.
Yeah.
Go realism.
And not only that, what the fuck is wrong with me that I know three off the top of my head?
Maybe you're just really into Dogma 95 and you're like, realism in all things.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. So today we are going on a lovely trip over to the Soviet Union. And I'm not going to be doing an accent to spare you all, and I will be, like, 87% sure that I'm going to fuck up these names. So you know what? Enjoy.
Oh, before we start, we have to do the traditional cracking open of the canned wine.
Oh, yes,
so
now that you're doing the canned
wine.
Today's
vintage, we added this. I'll be doing a canned wine or similar terrifying beverage, review while I will try one on air live so that you can learn what to drink and not to drink
from
normally,
the finest gas stations near you.
Yes, normally I do try to get it at a gas station or a drugstore, but today I actually stopped at the fancy grocery store in lovely Ballard, Washington.
Oh, Ballard neighborhood.
Yes, in your fancy neighborhood.
Oh, I love that market.
So there is a taste test component in my section of this visit to Mother Russia that I will be unleashing onto poor Regina. So you'll get to see her taste something horrifying live on air. It is part of my story.
I'm slightly horrified and yet excited.
Beets. But I will be cracking into... It is a... the vintage is Le Boule Mousse de Cigar. And the actual vintage... that it's 2017... Fizzy Pink of the Earth. So it's like a girly version of Black Blood of the Earth.
Fizzy Pink of the Earth sounds like the worst kind of porno about hippies ever.
Oh dear. I was just going with like a Big Trouble Little China reference there.
I am
Jack Burton in my heart of hearts. Honestly, when I'm about to make a terrible decision, my brain, I always just mutter to myself, what would Jack say? Jack would say, what the hell? And that's what I do.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
So I'm a little, and also Snake Plissken. Like, basically that whole, all of his finer, cheesy B-picture roles, that's who I'm...
From the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I can see it, actually. Yeah.
All right. So I'm about to crack this one up. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
This is our one piece of Foley. Okay, here it goes. Okay, the bouquet, it smells like wine.
Mm.
It does, so that's good.
It's better than the last time.
Yeah, the last one kind of smelled like socks. So let's try this one. Oh, it is fizzy. I think it's pink. I can't tell. It's in a can. I mean, it's not bad. It's actually kind of good.
Okay.
It's a sparkling wine. I don't know that it's Méthode Champenoise, but it's not champagne in a can. It's sparkling crap in a can, so it's good. I I would give this, like, I would give this four chugs up.
Nice. All right. All right. I like it. It's something new we're trying. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah. I just see how my liver holds up for this, how many episodes I can manage this.
I just enjoy watching you experiment with gas station wine.
Your face. A je ne sais quoi of aluminum. I'm really getting that. That's good. Tastes a little bit like blood. Like, you know, like... You smack yourself in the mouth and you're like, ow, accidentally. You get that little blood flavor.
So it's maybe like the fuzzy pink of the earth is the fuzzy pink
blood.
Yeah.
It's in fact black blood of the earth. It really is. But it's not bad. I would recommend this one.
If you like blood.
If you like blood.
Yeah, I mean.
Who doesn't?
It's blood soup, right?
Or like, God, what is the blood sausage?
That is blood sausage.
I don't want that.
No.
No, I don't.
All right. Well, I'm going to get us kicked off today with an absolutely fucking horrible story.
Yay!
I mean, that is my go-to.
I'm going to need this pink blood of the earth.
You are. You really are. All right. So I am telling us about the mystery of the Dietlof Pass incident.
Okay.
All right. Do you know anything about this?
I do. I think I listened to a episode of Lore on this, and, you know, there's like, it's aliens, it's Yetis, it's Bigfoot, it's hypothermia. Who knows? Let's find out.
So, Lore is definitely way above where I'm shooting to aim with this story. I mean, he always is. Aaron Mankey's fabulous.
We're not. Guess what we're not? This is the podcast that's not Aaron Mankey.
That is true.
Let's bring it down.
Yes.
To the horror. Because there's a lot of death and tragedy, and not like a happy death where they died sleeping snugly in their beds while visions of sugar plums. This is some bad shit.
Just stay the fuck out
of the mountains. Don't go into the forest. This is like, if you enjoy the outdoors, don't listen to this podcast.
Seriously, if you go someplace where I get to say, I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's Yeti, don't.
Pick a different vacation destination. Yes. Glamp somewhere, would you?
Okay. So, in January of 1959, a group of 10 students from the Ural Polytechnical Institute set out on a trip to Mount Oraton to get their grade 3 certificates as mountaineers, which would allow them to teach others. Like, these people were not slackers. They already held their stage 2s, and they were so badass that one of them, on a previous track, had been shot in the leg mid-trip by one of her fellow hikers.
Like you do, because, you know, you're just sort of shooting off guns. You're skeet shooting. Oh, it was like biathlon. Maybe they're doing like a biathlon thing. There you go. Sure.
Sure. But she then hiked out. I mean, mainly was carried, but still made it all the way out on this stage 2. So she was a badass. Oh, and then there was another one who literally charged with a climbing hammer at a bear who was charging their camp to scare it off, and did. Like, these people were experienced.
And nuts, because if this is what happens in stage 2 and you're like, oh, stage 3 is going to be awesome, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, this isn't me wandering out into Mount Rainier in a pair of shorts going, la, 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 la. No, these are people that know what they're doing.
Yes. Yes. Definitely not us.
These are people that are set up for survival.
Yes. So, they set out on their adventure to Mount Oraton, which, by the way, in the native Mansi language, means don't go there.
So, is this white people being stupid?
This is exactly what this is.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry. If the mountain is named Don't Go There, why not Don't Go There? I mean...
Yeah. I don't go to mountains that are called, this is an easy day hike, so I don't know.
I'm
not the right person to ask about any of this.
Nothing good can come of this, that's all I'm saying.
I don't enjoy elevations and the outdoors.
Mm-hmm. They were all in their 20s. Well, maybe that's why. I made some very questionable decisions in my 20s. Yeah. Anyway, they were all in their 20s, except for one of them, One of them ended up in their group due to his original group of hiking companions canceling. He was in his 30s, and so he had to change schedule, and they invited him to go along. I personally was forced to wonder what was going on in the Soviet Union at the time that set so many kids up the sides of mountains. And then one of the sources that I read stated that during this time period, they actually were not allowed to leave the country very easily. And so it made a little more sense. I mean, what else are you going to do when you're young, tough, looking for an adventure? Sure, climb a mountain.
Okay.
Yeah, why not? In America, we start doing things like meth, but I know some bitches that be hiking, so okay.
So, like, Outward Bound, that was your option.
Yeah.
Now, what year was this?
1959,
okay.
Yeah, so we're not even in the 60s yet.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So the names of the young adventurers were, and God, please forgive me, people, Igor Dyatlov, the 23-year-old expedition leader, and the one the pass was eventually named after, Yuri Doroshenko, 21. There are multiple Yuris, so just be ready for that.
There are a lot of Yuris. Yeah.
Yeah. Ludmila Dubinina, 20. The second Yuri, Krivonoshenko.
You're doing great.
Thanks.
Ochin Hirosho.
23, who went by Georgie.
I would too. Yeah.
Yeah. However, a name that I will never be able to hear without thinking about a clown in a sewer. Thanks, Stephen King. Awesome. Alexander Kolyatov, 24. Zenaida Kolmogorova, 22. Rustam Slobodin, 23. Nikolai Thibault Brignoles, 23. Simon Zolotaroev.
Zoloft?
Sure. 38.
He's real relaxed.
Who went by Alexander and had the unfortunate luck of being there at all. I mean, he was the one who was 38.
Oh,
yeah.
In the 30. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And our third and final Yuri, who was the only survivor, Yuri Yurden, 21. Yuri Yurden actually died in April of 2013 at the age of 78. The only reason that he survived was because he left the expedition early due to illness. So I gathered some conflicting evidence here about his illness exactly. They're not sure if it had to do with his just being a sickly person in general. As somebody who is a sickly person in general.
In this case, it was a survival skill.
Exactly. I don't know how he was up there with a fucking stage two. But he had heart issues. He had a lot of issues. But then in another article that I read where they were interviewing him, they said that he had dysentery, and that's what caused him to end up turning back.
Oh, that would cause me to... I have had dysentery. That will cause you to turn back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So for once, hooray for bad butts. Hooray for diarrhea is what we're saying in this particular... Diarrhea, it can save your life.
It really is the answer out of any situation, isn't it? I can't stay at work anymore. Diarrhea.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry. Your ex wants to invite you to their wedding. I'd love to come, but I know I have some diarrhea scheduled for that date in June.
Yeah.
Sure. No, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, diarrhea. It's the best excuse ever. Get diarrhea. Stay alive.
So on January 28th, they were in Versailles, which is the last outpost on the trek, and that's when this illness or these chronic ailments really caused him to turn back. And he was extremely lucky because he survived. There's a very sad picture of him hugging one of the girls goodbye with a big grin. In fact, there are many photos, journals, and even their own little newspaper that they called the Evening Ortonton, also known as the Don't Go There News.
But, you know, today that's pretty much like just all
any
news.
Newspaper. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the paper was a fun thing to do and really popular at that time, though. It was like a cultural thing. And the rest of the documentation was necessary to prove the accomplishment and the expedition itself to get their Stage 3 certification. So they had a lot of documentation all through the trip. And it was because of that and their journals and the pictures that we know for certain that on February 1st, the group managed to veer off trail slightly due to a snowstorm. And they ended up at the top of Kjolatsegel, known in the Mansi language as, get this, Dead Mountain.
Oh, great. From Don't Go There Pass to Dead Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like this is very welcoming. Yeah, I feel welcomed.
Yeah, later to be named Irony Mountain. I personally realize that I choose to live and die on Sarcasm Mountain along with the rest of the family and most of my good friends. So, what the fuck? Captain Obvious Mountain?
I personally end up going to Poor Life Choices Plateau. That's usually where I'm camped. But yeah, no, I feel you.
I go over there for vacation. Don't worry, yeah. Okay. The thing is, it's called Dead Mountain, not due to previous tragedies or anything. It was because it was devoid of anything living at all. The Mansi people, didn't even go there to hunt because there was no life on this mountain. There are only two other things that are absolutely certain after that. The first, that somewhere between February 1st and 2nd, all 9 hikers perished. And the second, I will tell you about in a moment. When the students didn't report back as planned, it took a while for the alarm to be raised. With expeditions like this, it was pretty common for delays to come up due to weather problems. Or based on the hiker's own history, bears or gunshots, apparently. I mean, this isn't unexpected. It wasn't until 11 days after the group was supposed to show up that the real search actually began. At the time, Yuri Yurden still was not back, and so they weren't entirely sure what route they had taken. They just knew they went to the pass and they were missing. They didn't even know how many of them were missing because Yuri wasn't back yet. So they just went in that direction trying to figure out where these people were. When Yuri finally came back, he knew that his friends would reappear. He absolutely believed it because they were experienced explorers. I seriously feel bad for this man. He was questioned, he was shown all of the items that were found eventually and made to name who they belonged to. He had survivor's guilt, he never married, he did live a very successful life, but he was quoted as saying many times, if I could ask God one question, it would be, what happened to my friends that night?
I know, was he ever suspected, or was it more like, we don't know what's going on, you're the only person that actually knew these guys, whose is this, what is that, whose hand is that,
well,
things like that?
I imagine, it doesn't say that he was suspected, but I imagine at some point in the whole thing, somebody had to question him.
Sure.
And then quickly find out that he either had heart issues or dysentery and was not up on the mountain murdering his friends. But it's still, he had to identify things.
Sure.
Yeah. And he had to identify things. It's because of him that we know one of the journals is missing. So here's where I'm going to offer a warning. We're going to get into real weird and real graphic real quick. On the 26th of February, the searchers found the group's abandoned and badly but damaged tent on Dead Mountain. But it quickly became apparent that there was something very off with the campsite. The tent had been cut from the inside in one long slash and covered in a very thin layer of snow. Inside the tent, in orderly piles, were the hikers' clothing and hiking boots, as well as almost all of their gear, journals, cameras, and the personally made newspaper, The Evening Ortonton. Let me tell you, the headline of that little paper did not help with the theories. From now on, we know that snowmen exist. Then it says, they can be met in the northern Urals next to Ortonton Mountain.
Snowmen? Probably not Frosty.
Like I said, I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's Yeti. What? Yeah.
Now, of course, all I can picture is, like, the abominable snowman from a, like, Rankin-Bass Christmas type. No, that kind?
No.
I like that guy.
I do,
he
yes.
He seems nice.
Hmm. So, they think that they were jokingly referring to themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like this happened before all the bad transpired.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Leading away from the tent, the rescuers found 8 or 9 sets of footprints, all without shoes, except for one who had on only one shoe. The whole 8 or 9 thing really makes me wonder. I mean, this is one of those things that you should think you would be pretty definitive in that deep of snow and everything. I mean, that's like asking somebody how many people you've slept with and the answer is 8 or 9. Like, did I forget a private part in there somewhere? Was it even memorial enough to count? I guess what I'm really asking is, if a peen falls in the snow and leaves no impression, did that peen ever fall at all?
I mean, I guess I could see that it might be, like, confused if they're kind of, like, wandering around. Like, is that set of tracks or this set of tracks? But, yeah, it's hard for me to visualize it because I'm not a search and rescue person.
There are a lot of pictures.
Okay.
There are a lot of pictures.
If it's snowing, I'm going to stay indoors person.
I'm giving warning, if you choose to go out and look at the pictures on this one, you are going to see pictures of the dead bodies as well. So please be aware of that before you go looking this one up.
Yeah, don't click through unless you know what you're going to click through to.
You know, I feel like that's just good life advice right
yes,
there.
Yes, it is, actually.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The rescuers followed the track, and several led to a large cedar tree at the edge of a copse of woods about a mile away from the campsite. Under this tree, the search team found the remains of a small fire and the bodies of the two remaining Yuris, who had died from hypothermia. I'm assuming that Yuris run in packs.
Oh, yes. Yes. Very much so, yes.
They were both barefoot and in their underclothes. They had burns on their hands, most likely from leaning in too close to the fire, and they had tree bark under their nails. The branches of the tree that they were under, the big cedar tree, were broken up to 5 meters off the ground, adding another element of oddity to this case. People think, you know, it could have been for the fire, but it didn't make sense that it was just for the fire. So some people theorize that maybe they climbed up the tree or they were attempting to climb up the tree and away from something, but they don't know for sure. All we know is that they were huddled around this fire. They had burn marks on them. They were undressed. Was it from paradoxical undressing or paradoxical hypothermia?
Right, that's where you feel hot, so you take all your clothes off because you're actually freezing to death.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. That happens in about 25% of all hypothermia cases. So, I mean, it could have been that. We don't know for sure. I do know that one of them had been turned after he had died, though. In between the copse of woods and the camp, 3 more of the hikers were discovered. Tietlov, Kolomogorov, and Sobloden. It appeared that they were heading back in the direction of the camp, and they were distanced about 200 meters from each other when they fell. They were in their underclothes, too, maybe from the whole paradoxical undressing, maybe because they ran out without their clothes on to begin with. I mean, it was cut from the inside and the tent looked like they left in a hurry. And Dietlov also had a small skull fracture. Not enough to kill him, but he didn't have any external soft tissue damage around that would indicate being crushed or hit or from behind in the skull at all. So that is definitely a mystery. Coming from someone who used to be in the medical field, I can't explain that.
You would just have a fracture in your skull, but the soft tissue was not
damaged around.
Like your head from the inside, maybe.
Yes.
But how do you from the inside?
Yes, exactly.
I'm not a doctor.
Vibration.
I can't explain.
The vibration, maybe. I don't know. But that fascinates
That's a
me.
That's
a weird one. The 4 remaining hikers took over 2 more months to find. I think it was like 2.5 months to find. But on May 4th, they were finally dug out of the snow in a ravine 75 meters from the cedar tree in the woods. These 4 bodies took the ongoing investigation from unfortunate accident to just...
What the actual fucking...
Yes, heck. Of all kinds of conspiracy theories, everything you can imagine. So they were in various states of dress, having taken clothes from their companions, whether pre or post-mortem is unknown, so we don't know if maybe they grabbed each other's clothes before they ran out, but some of them looked like they had been cut off, and one pair of pants was actually burned in the same way from one of the guys who had been under the tree, so it's thought that maybe the person who was wearing them cut them off of them or pulled them off of them. And like I said, that one body was moved after death, so it would make sense. Aside from the various states of undress, they were highly damaged and in strange ways. Dubina and Zola Tarev both had fractured ribs, and Thibodeau Brignoles had a terrible skull fracture. The skull fracture was so bad that it would require the force of a car crash to cause it, meaning that the injuries could not have physically even been caused by another person. It was more like the skull had been crushed by pressure. And even stranger, yet again, there was no soft tissue damage.
Like from the inside, like from a huge explosion that, like the maybe sound wave, I don't know. I don't know how that works. I'm some kind of physicist doctor. I don't, like I'm Buckaroo Banzai. I don't know. I don't know.
Fucking love that movie. I need to watch that again.
That is Wilhelm's favorite film. His favorite movie in the history of all movies. He's Team Banzai. Yes.
As am I.
I mean, Rawhide, that's my favorite. I have a Clancy Brown thing that I don't want to talk to you people about because it's very personal to me. But no, I just love Clancy Brown. He's so America's best character actor. Fight me on this.
You know what her Instagram is. What is your Insta?
Lynn the Art Dork. I knew that one. See, when you asked me, I'm like, oh God, I don't know. It's on my phone. Okay. No, it's Lynn the Art Dork.
And what's your Twitter?
It's rats and hats.
There you go. So
see, I know my... I knew that. I was waiting. I was waiting for you to ask me, and I knew this time.
I'm so proud of you.
I don't know what's on the phone. Yeah. See, yeah. This is why I can't... I don't do things like stage 3 mountaineering tests, because I can't even figure out social media in a warm 62-degree climate-controlled room. So I can't do any of these things on a mountain, which is why I'm alive today.
Hey.
So plus. Incompetence and softness saves my ass again.
Ah, yeah. Yes. Yet again, you did not die by misadventure.
Yep.
I want to go on record, and I know I think I have before, if I die by misadventure, no, that's how I want it to go out.
By misadventure?
And, yes, okay. By misadventure. And if I die eating a fucking peanut, what do you tell people when they ask you, oh, how did Regina die?
By misadventure.
Thank you.
Actual death by unexplained misadventure. We were at...
Skulls.
Crushed skulls. We were at interiorly crushed skulls.
Yes. Okay. So then Dubina was found to be missing her tongue from the root and her eyes.
Oh, no.
Now, remember how I told you that there were two things that I was absolutely certain of? One was the...
Death and taxes.
Time frame. Well, that's true, but... One was the time frame of the death, and there was another fact that I was going to tell you about later that I gleaned just from doing my research on this.
What's fact number two, laid on me?
Dubina was still alive when her tongue was ripped out because blood was found in her stomach from being swallowed.
Thank you, no.
Yeah.
I'll pass.
So whatever happened to them, that is a fact. She was alive when her tongue was ripped out. Another one of the guys had his eyes taken out as well.
So, again, do we know if that was... I guess with the eyeballs, we don't know if that's pre or post. Because, again, if it's a body... I know it's dead mountain, nothing lives there, no animals, but, like, birds and beaver, beavers and shit do like to
one
eat
thing.
Eyeballs.
I definitely agree with you there, and it is a possibility. But they had to dig them out still. Even though the mountain was beginning to thaw, it was 2 months later... They still had to completely dig them out. You can see the pictures online. I don't think that any animals would have had time to get their eyeballs because when they got lost and died, they were in a
storm. Okay.
And we have proof that they couldn't find them, only...
Ice weasels. It was burrowing ice weasels. That's what did them all in.
Always. Always.
At night, the ice weasels come.
Okay. So, we don't know. If it was due to natural decomp, due to animals, because an animal did nibble off the nose of one of the guys who was under the tree, but he wasn't buried in snow.
Okay, so he was like lying on top, an ice weasel came by and was like, oh, I'll have that. That looks delicious.
Mm-hmm. But that's also the only bit I read about an animal actually eating any of them.
They could say, oh yes, we see the little bite mm-hmm. marks. We know this is...
And if you do want to do a lot of digging...
Pine marten or something.
Maybe. If you do want to do a lot of digging or research into this, I definitely suggest you go to the institute that was created in search of the truth of the Dyatlov Pass incident's website and just look it up, Dyatlov Pass, and you'll find it.
I also wonder, too, if, like, research into this is helped or hampered by the fact that this is the Soviet Union and there is a lot of tightness
time
to the media.
Get there.
But now it's kind of like, you have money, I give you thing. You want the information? Okay, I give to you.
It's very interesting. So once the bodies were taken back for autopsy, it got even stranger. They were slightly radioactive.
Slightly radioactive. Cool, mm-hmm. cool.
I forget the metric that I heard, but it was like 1,100 somethings. I heard it offhand, and I was like, that doesn't sound right. But think about it like this. So radioactivity does take a long time to dissipate, yes, but they had been buried under ice for 4 months, under snow for 4 months, and they were still slightly radioactive. How slightly radioactive do you have to be to still be giving off that slight radioactivity?
Again, not Bucker Banzai, so I don't know.
I don't know either. I try.
And, like, are there ores on the mountain? Is being at elevations? Like, how does that, I don't know.
I don't know either. People who witnessed the funerals said that they looked differently, too. Like, their skin was slightly different color, their hair was slightly a different color, and they said that of all of the bodies. I'm saying these people went up there and froze and were under ice for a while.
I
of
feel
course,
like,
they're going to look different.
Yeah, even if this was just like, oh, we absolutely know they died of hypothermia, there were no ice weasels or yetis or aliens. Yeah, that's going to wear on a body.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And back then, we didn't have the great preserving processes we have now, or the, let's say, putty and makeup processes we have now for display.
I'm going on record right here and saying that I will legitimately figure out a way to come back from the dead and haunt your ass if, when I die, you have a viewing of my dead body all embalmed and shit. Please do not do that. No, I will haunt you.
No.
How do I want to be remembered? As, like, a puttied, overly made-up corpse. That is exactly what I would love your last image of me to be. Please don't do that.
Yeah. No, I'm not for that either. You know how I want to go out? I have told Mr. Mao how I want to go out.
Viking funeral?
Yes!
I would like to be catapulted into the sun. That sounds fun.
No, I mean, really, I don't care if he takes my ashes out on a little remote-controlled boat then shoots it on fire and sinks my ass to the bottom of the ocean. That's what I want.
Okay, Viking funeral. Yeah. Barry is pretty into that idea, too, and this gives me a good idea of how we could do this legally.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so back to the story.
Okay.
Also, very strangely, Zolotaroyev fled the tent with his camera, but not his clothes.
Well, you gotta take the important things.
Yeah, but everybody else left their cameras behind, and, like, I think it was his camera that the last picture on it was really strange. 2 weeks after the discovery of the bodies, the case was closed by the government as a terrible accident or death by misadventure, as, you know, I want people to say one day about me, and that they died of hypothermia or from crushing blows of some kind.
Ice weasels. Sure.
Then the government quickly classified the files and closed the mountain down for 3 fucking years.
Interesting.
So that picture that I said was very interesting. People have many theories about this. It's just a flash. It's like somebody took a picture of a flare or something. And eyewitnesses' accounts from that evening say that they saw flares or flashes in the sky in that area. They also say that the tops of the trees were burnt of the woods. I didn't see any pictures that showed the tops of the trees being burnt, but then again, I can't really say that I saw any pictures of the tops of the trees.
Sure.
So
that's a possibility, but not necessarily something that is absolutely provably canon.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
And In addition to that, there is a military base where they do testings nearby.
Oh, dude, it was totes McGoats, like a nuclear missile. Yes. That's on team nuclear missile.
Well, let's look at it like this. If this is 1959.
Super duper Cold War times, kids.
Super duper Cold War times. Even prior to Bay of
Pigs. Oh, yeah.
This is the Soviet Union. This isn't even Russia. This is the Soviet Union. But some government cover-up is one of the biggest theories behind this. In fact, years later, when the government released, the Russian government released the files, unclassified it, many pieces of the file were missing. Lost, quote unquote. In between.
Lost.
Yes. In
redacted.
Between. Yes.
Man, I don't know how to say redacted in Russian.
One government to another. You can't keep paperwork straight, right? You just lose pieces of files all
Sometimes
the time.
Sometimes file go missing. Oh, no. Yamishnayu, I don't know what happens. Yes.
Yes. So, the institute that was created to solve this mystery, well, at a certain point, they have to call it because people are dying. Like, the last Yuri just died in 2013. And so they really went over everything. They talked to all of the witnesses again who are still alive. And they did a reenactment on the pass itself. And what they concluded was the reason the group died was due to military interference of some kind.
I mean, that makes the most sense to me. I'm kind of rooting for radioactive yetis. Military bad stuff. As the Scully to this particular podcast, I will say probably yes, military shenanigans.
Yes, probably. Anyway, so there's that theory. There's also the theory it was just regular yetis.
Sure.
From the newspaper.
Look, they're naturally radioactive because of the hair gel they use.
Well, also, the local Mansi tribe did warn them that the creature that they have there, I'm not sure what the name of it is, but it is basically a very aggressive yeti, had recently eaten their yak herds in that area. And so they were warning them, be careful when you go up there because
the yetis are hungry.
Now, the government tried to blame it on the local Mansi tribe at first, but that made absolutely no sense because they're not violent people.
Yeah.
And so
why would they kill a bunch of hikers that they were actually warning?
Yes, made no sense whatsoever. So fortunately, for the first time, the local tribes did not take the fall.
I'm like, wait a minute, white people blaming natives or something?
No, that's
never happened before.
Never. Then there is the theory that it was aliens. So that is the story of the past because
we still don't know
what happened to them all these years later. My guess, it was the government. It was an accident.
Yeah, some kind of military blob. Oops, sorry, boom.
Yeah, it was death by misadventure.
Definitely death. I mean, again, I'm still hoping for radioactive ice weasels, but death by misadventure.
Yeah. So tell me something good.
Tell me something good. Okay, so I'm going to actually read you guys a real Russian fairy tale. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
Okay, so we will talk about the Baba Yaga. But I will also say this is a taste-along adventure. I have brought you something delicious. Okay, so when we get to it in the story, I will let you know. But in advance of this particular part of the episode, I found beet kvass. That's easiest to find here in Seattle. But kvass is like Russian kombucha. It's often made out of dark rye bread, but you can make it out of beets or other things. And it's a lightly fermented, like a near beer kind of beverage. And it's really popular. It's kind of sour and tangy and tasty. In some parts of Russia, it's more popular than Coca-Cola. Because it's not made from imperialist, capitalist running dog juices like the capitalist Coca-Cola. No, it's really good. I like it, but I also like sauerkraut and kimchi and fermented, stinky, pickled things that I have to burp on my countertop. So I might be creepy.
So I do, too, but not all of them. So I'm both excited and slightly terrified to try this.
Oh, be afraid. Be very afraid.
Okay.
Okay, deity, settle down. We are going to tell you a story. So, we're going to trek deep into the birch forests of Mother Russia today as I terribly mangle centuries of beautiful Slavic folklore and tell you the story of Baba Yaga, among others. Really, the story of Baba Yaga isn't really her own story, but she's the antagonist to Russia's version of kind of like a Cinderella figure, Vasilisa the Beautiful. And she shows up in a lot of stories, but this is kind of the big one, where she's kind of the Maleficent. Yeah, so she's like the antagonist to the protagonist, if you will. So snuggle down, deity. That means children. Snuggled. Children. All snug in your little Malenki beds while I tell you some very spooky fairy stories. So before I start off on my lovable dipshit retelling of this tale, let me give credit where credit is due and let you all know that the main text that I got the story from is from the Sur La Lune fairy tales version of Vasilisa the Beautiful, and it's by Heidi Ann Heiner, which was also by her taken in part from the 1912 book Russian Wonder Tales. Let it never be said that we do not cite sources on this here cast.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
If you ever want to know, I can always just pull them for you.
Okay. Well, I'm citing my sources so y'all don't get mad.
I did cite one of mine.
There you go. The Institute. There have been some issues with that lately, and I just wanted to be like, here it is. So, this all starts off in pretty standard folklore fashion. There's a kind merchant with a lovely wife who has a beloved daughter named Vasilisa the Beautiful, who is Natch Beautiful, as her name implies, but also kind and loving and clever and all that awesome Disney stuff. So far, so good. I mean, happy family, lovely daughter. What could go wrong? What does Disney hate? Mothers.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Yes. So, naturally, young Vasilisa's mother fell ill when the girl was about 8 years old, and lying on her deathbed, Vasilisa's mother, who has no name because do mothers in fairy tales...
Well, she was a woman. Why mention the name?
Why would she have a name?
She's not important.
Right. She hands Vasilisa a little wooden doll and says, "Always keep this doll in your pocket. Never show it to anyone. But if evil or sorrow threatens you, go to a quiet corner, take out doll, and give it something to eat and to drink. It will feed, and then you can tell it your troubles, and it will find a way to help you." She then kissed her daughter on the head and promptly expired. So late that night, sweet baby Vasilisa is crying and grieving. Like, of course you would, right?
Yes, I can attest.
Yes, and she can't sleep, but she remembers what her mom, who just died, who I'm going to call, let's give moms and fairy tales a goddamn story. I'm calling her Natasha the Creepy. She told her to do, take the freaky little pocket monster that she bequeathed on her deathbed out and feed her. Vasilisa gets the doll out of her apron pocket that she's been hanging up on the wall, finds a little crust of toast and some kvass, which we mentioned. So it's about your turn to drink. Are you ready?
I think I'm ready.
Okay. And she holds them to the mouth of the doll. So drink, try your kvass. Here it comes.
Oh, God, if I don't take out the mic first. Hold on.
Okay, see what happens if you drink the kvass.
And I open it.
So good for you.
Here we go.
Chug. Well, that's a face. That's an exciting face. Okay, I feel like we've just turned into Fear Factor here. I mean, it's an acquired taste.
It is an acquired taste, that is to be sure. It is very sour.
Yes.
It is, you can taste that beet. I do like beets, but it's the extremely potent fizzy sour that comes after it.
It's good times.
That feels very strange. It's like I'm drinking, it feels like I'm drinking soured beet earth.
Yes. It tastes like liquid dirt. That is the black blood of the earth right there.
That is exactly what that is.
Well, what happened to this doll from she scarfing this down?
Got pissed and went over and bit her.
No, her eyes began to glow.
And same, girl, same. Yeah,
and like the fucked up Russian mail order bride of Chucky, old spooky Malibu Skipper springs to life and devours the snack. The doll then speaks and actually kind of gives some good advice to Vasilisa. Grief is worst at night. Lie down, comfort thyself, and sleep. The morning is wiser than the evening. So that's what Vasilisa did. She felt less alone in the morning because of her creepy little puppet pal. And, yeah, everything was going okay. Anyway, because this is a fairy tale, naturally, her widower father didn't stay a widower much longer because that would be kind of boring.
Well, also, back in that day, that time period of yore when this was set, it was encouraged for a man to quickly remarry because he was virile and needed to have many children. Because some of them would die. All of them would die. You were lucky if you made it out with 1 in 10.
So, of course, widower dad goes out there and he decides what he needs to cheer him and his little daughter up is a new mommy, a new wife. Mm. And naturally, that new wife is, well, a gigantic bitch with 2 gigantic bitch daughters from her previous relationship.
Naturally.
Because this is a fairy tale.
Right.
As a child of a blended family, let me just take a minute to give a shout out to the many wonderful step-parents and step-siblings in the real honest-to-God world out there. Blended families are fucking great, but not in historically fairy tales. So anyway, just wanted to get that out there. Step-families can be super great. They will not be in this story. So in time-honored Cinderella style, new wife and daughters move into the little dacha and begin spending new papa's money and treating Vasilisa like total Russian dog shit. You see, shitty stepmom was not only greedy and into marrying this kind merchant dude pretty much for his money and status, but she and her gigantic bitch daughters were also super duper jealous of how pretty Vasilisa was in comparison to how unattractive they were. So instead of throwing off the petty shackles of patriarchy and toxic beauty culture and cultivating well-rounded personalities like they probably fucking should have done, these ladies went with torturing Vasilisa by forcing her to do all the household chores in an attempt to make her haggard and ugly with toil and sadness.
I believe they have CPS for that these days.
Yeah, they did not in, like, 18th century Russia.
I'm not sure how good it is in current century Russia.
Yeah. So, the joke's on you, gigantic step-bitches, because old Vasilisa has her Malibu skipper, and that creepy little doll does all the work in secret, paid with merely a scrap of bread and some delicious fermented beet juice.
Yeah, that would make me come to life and do some shit for you,
right?
Too.
You'd just be like, bleh, I gotta sweep! So, things got worse for poor Vasilisa. The older and prettier and more full of sex appeal that she got, the worse her shitty stepfamily was. This poor kid was basically both Olsen twins rolled into one in terms of the way that the creepy village dudes were just like waiting and salivating on her to be the right legal age for marrying.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. Yeah. What the fuck was wrong with you, everyone?
Everyone's gross.
Yes.
That's what we're talking. And it wasn't like we just became gross. Things have been gross for a while.
Well, this show proves that on a bi-weekly basis.
Yeah, I mean history, motherfuck. So the suitors, they just came rolling up to the door in droves, asking for Vasilisa's hand in marriage. And this got, of course, the shitty stepfamily super riled up because nobody was calling on the 2 ugly meanie daughters. And Vasilisa then, of course, got the holy living hell beat out of her nightly because life is super fucking fair like that. But while this is all going on, you may wonder, where the fuck is Dad?
Well, yeah, I was wondering what the fuck what Dad was doing.
Well,
I mean, he should say something here.
You'd think, except he had to go out of town to a distant tsardom to do some kind of merchant-type shit and left her all alone with these scheming shitbirds. So he's out of the picture. He can't help her. She's kind of
screwed.
She's on her own. And after he left, things had reached such a fever pitch that they were like, we got to get rid of this bitch somehow. So what do? They
pick the worst guy out there to marry her to.
No, they didn't do that. They actually decided, we don't even let this bitch get married at all. We're going to sell our nice house in town, because we're going to cut off our goddamn nose to spite our ugly fucking faces, and we're going to move into a creepy little cabin on the edge of the village, on the edge of the gloomy, haunted murder forest, and then we're going to start sending Vasilisa deep into the creepy, haunted murder forest on the daily to do chores.
So wait.
Nice,
what
pretty.
What are haunted murder forest chores exactly? Is that like, hey, go out into the haunted murder forest over there and pick me up a cup of ectoplasm?
Well, it was like, we need you to get these berries to dye our beautiful clothes deep in the fucking gloomy fucking murder forest. So they would send her on trumped up bullshit. We need you to pick mushrooms from the enchanted devil grove and shit like that. We're starting to, like, do a mashup with Hansel and Gretel at this point.
Yeah.
We've moved from Cinderella into Hansel and Gretel territory because it's Russia. We have everything. Very large country. All of it together. Beautiful. It's like beautiful borscht of fairy tales together. What the evil scheming stepmother knew about the forest that our poor Vasilisa didn't was that it was the dwelling place of the infamous Baba Yaga. Yep, almost two fucking pages into the story, and we finally get to Baba Yaga. Baba Yaga is not your average Western European soft fairy tale witch living in creepy little cottage in the woods. No. No. This is the Florida man of European fairy tale witchery. Serious madness, bath salts, face eating. Seriously.
Have you seen those bath salts videos on YouTube with the people rising up like fucking snakes on their own?
No.
Oh my god, it is a rabbit hole that is terrifying to go down.
Look, I'm already scared of YouTube to begin with, so I would never.
It's horrifying.
I'm never going to Google bath salts. It's never.
Horrifying. Horrifying. They rise up like a fucking snake. I mean, I've never seen anything like it short of people, like professional dancers doing this shit. It is fucking terrifying. Please, continue.
So, like, when you're talking about your basic Hansel and Gretel witch, there's like a gingerbread hut in the middle of a forest, kind of thing like that. But this is madness, one step beyond. Because her, Baba Yaga's miserable little hut in the woods, it's not built on a sturdy foundation of stone or gingerbread with maybe a nice root cellar in there for storing some pickled kids' feet or the Eye of Newt. Nope, this miserable fucking hut in the woods is built on top of a pair of giant motherfucking chicken legs.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Like?
Chicken legs.
Like,
motherfuckers.
There was a giant... There was a giant chicken.
Yes.
Where's the rest of the giant chicken?
Fuck if I know. I just know where the legs are.
How did she get the legs?
She ordered that meal. She was like, give me the two-piece leg. Raise and lower kind of situation. Yeah.
They raise and lower? Like, on chicken legs, they're not just bones?
No, they're like you could walk around chicken legs.
Oh, my God. So it's like Howl's Moving Castle, but with...
But I don't know if it shits. That's the question that I have. Does it leave like a trail of chicken shit in the woods? I don't know.
What would it shit? If it shits like house material, would it be?
Bricks? It would shit bricks. That's what it would shit.
It would shit bricks. That's where the phrase came from, shitting bricks.
That is a solid etymological leap, and I'm sticking with it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so it's on a goddamn giant moving, walking, scratching chicken legs. And because it would be wrong to bite the legs that feed you, Baba Yaga, she don't eat chickens, people. She eats people.
Makes perfect sense.
She goes full Soylent Green. Just eats people. So now, Malibu Skipper, the voracious sentient doll, of course, knows all about old Baba Yaga because she's been reading up, right? And so she makes sure that Vasilisa stays well the fuck away from Satan's KFC during her haunted murder forest chores because, she wants to keep Vasilisa alive. So this is, of course, pissing off shitty stepfam to the nth degree because why don't you fucking die already, Vasilisa the beautiful? So they're mad, right?
Of course. Bitches.
So one night they're like, all right, we're going to escalate this son of a bitch to DEFCON 4. And they come up with the one plan that will force Vasilisa to absolutely positively visit this witch and die, right?
They tell her they need giant chicken legs for dinner.
Right. No, it's slightly less weird than that. So shitty stepmom goes around their little house on the edge of the creepy murder forest
and puts out all the fires and the little lanterns and candles during kind of the afternoon, like so nobody notices. And then as they're all sitting around in the parlor, just around this one candle, and all four of them are like hanging out by the light of that one candle, squinting like mad and like fucking making lace or sewing or tatting or whatever the fuck weird domestic hobbies that you had before the good old days of electricity and Netflix. They're all sitting around doing that. And then one of the stepsisters is all like, oops, and leans over and snuffs out the one remaining candle. And then they're like, oh my God, we have no light in the house. What are we to do?
Get a match?
Oh no, we don't even have that. We have nothing. Oh my God. What will we do? So what do they do? They immediately banish Vasilisa to go out and get them some fire and not fucking come back till she's got one. Like a match or some shit. So lucky for her, she's got Malibu Skipper that she whips out of her pocket, gives a crust of bread that she's also got squirreled away, and is like, what the fucking hell am I supposed to do now? Side note, this reason right here, this whole pocket thing, this is why women are pissed that many of our clothes do not have pockets. Where the fuck are we supposed to put our super absorbent tampons on our magic bread-eating Malibu Skippers who tell us how not to die in the forest?
Fun fact.
Patriarchy.
Do you know why we actually don't have pockets?
Because God hates us?
Because during suffragette times, we would carry around pamphlets and pockets.
Oh,
it was dangerous
that.
To give women pockets.
I carry around Malibu Skipper in mine, but do you?
I don't know, if I was 9, I'd carry around Polly Pocket, but I'm saying be dangerous, sew pockets into our shit.
Anyway, back to it. So, Vasilisa asks old Betsy Weirdsy what the fuck to do after she wakes her up with her snack, and the doll says that they should proceed to Baba Yaga's Freaky Chicken Shack, which is incidentally what I would name a fried chicken restaurant if I ever opened one.
Oh my God, I would eat there.
Daily. And that the doll would make sure that nothing bad happened to Vasilisa. So old V, she plucks up her courage and sets off into the darkening forest, because what other choice does she have? So she'd only gone a little way into the gloom. Remember, this is like afternoon, tending toward evening, when suddenly, out of nowhere, she hears a horse galloping towards her. She turns to see a rider who's very, very pale and all dressed in white, on top of a snow-white horse, go crashing through the forest beside her, and then suddenly, all the remaining light in the sky fades into twilight. So she wanders around in this pitch-black woods for hours and hours until again she hears her hoofbeats approach, and suddenly a rider all dressed in red on a blood-red roan comes crashing through the trees beside her, and suddenly it's dawn. So some magical horse shit totally happening.
That is literally what's going down right now.
Magical horse shit. Yes. So poor old Vasilisa, even with the meager light that the sun that is kind of creeping through the trees is bringing to her, keeps walking all day without any food for herself to eat or any to give that doll to make it come to life. And she has no company, she has no GPS, and she's just miserable indeed, like every time I was forced to go camping as a child with Barry. So suddenly, as evening was approaching, she comes to the little clearing in the forest where the chicken shack stands. Now, every good chicken shack needs a severely fucked up and forbidding fence around it, doesn't it?
Oh, solidly, yes.
I mean, HGTV, don't they have a whole, like, series, like, you know, Pimp My Chicken Shack about horrible fences?
Right? I mean, it has to be framed correctly.
The Property Brothers, yes. They're on this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, naturally, Baba Yaga's home was surrounded by a delightful human bone fence where there were skulls atop the posts. And the gate was, naturalish, was hinged by human foot bones, and the locks on the fence were jawbones set with razor-sharp teeth that were, like, snapped into one another.
If you're gonna do it, go big or go home,
right? So Vasilisa is basically standing there slack-jawed with horror at the sight of all of it, like, I feel like anyone would. And
I would be terribly curious.
I would be
is
like,
it real?
Where do you get that? I would go poke the skull. I would, right? That's how I die. I would die poking a skull.
Yes.
Well, as she's standing there like, motherfucker, yet again, another fashion-forward, color-coordinated rider appears on horseback. This time, with a jet black face and jet black hands, all decked out in black like fucking Johnny Cash, riding on the black stallion. But this time, instead of just like crashing through the underbrush, freaking everybody out, the rider charges the gate and then goes full Harry Potter platform 9 3/4 and just disappears at the threshold. Poof. And then the real horror started.
Well, did it affect the time of day at all? Or is it just...
It's always night around Baba Yaga's castle. What weak daylight did manage to find its way to the forest floor in old Russian Mirkwood was extinguished with the Black Rider's disappearance. And suddenly, the eyes on all the fancy fence skulls were ablaze with light. So, like, they're totally functional, eco-friendly, and fashionable, right?
Oh, that's a perfect place to get fire, too.
Yeah, isn't that rad?
Just run over there with a stick, light it on fire, run the fuck away.
Oh, no, is no time for that.
Oh.
And then the woods themselves began to moan and groan as though a horrible storm had suddenly sprung up within it, and the tree branches rubbed and squeaked and flailed against one another, and the leaves were all a-tremble as Baba Yaga herself came flying out of the forest halfway through the fucking story. Sorry, guys. Now, what sweet ride do you think a woman who has a hut on giant motherfucking chicken legs and a light-up fancy skull fence is going to be pulling up to the curb in?
Cat.
No cats. Sorry, no cats. Nope. She's all about the unconventional vehicle. So she rides up in a
giant... Unicycle!
Nope, not even... She's not even the Unipiper, damn it! She rides up in a giant iron mortar that she's rowing using an enormous wooden pestle, all the while sweeping her trail away behind her with a kitchen broom.
This seems very unpractical.
Right? So, okay, for our younger listeners who are all like, what now? So a mortar and pestle are essentially like old-timey food grinders, like an old-timey like coffee grinder, right? It's a big cup, usually made of stone or iron, with a big wooden or stone like mashing club that you use inside the cup to crush up seeds or corns or spices.
I use it for my spices. Sure. I have a marble one.
That's what most people use, but like, you know, it's kind of all cultures across the world, from Mesoamerica to Asia to Europe, have always used this as like a way to grind up grains, spices, anything hard, right?
And for me, I think it's very cultural.
So, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's totally a thing.
But it's not a fucking vehicle.
No, 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 God. It's like something, it's like a kitchen implement. It's not giant, it's not like the chicken legs. Like, it's, yeah, it's nuts. Honestly, also, like you, I have no idea how the hell she's managing all this insane multitasking, what with the rowing of the pestle and the sweeping of the broom. I fucking can't manage a stick shift, let alone juggling all that goddamn nonsense while I'm flying through the goddamn birch forest. But I'm not an all-powerful grandmother witch of the Russian steppes. So she's got, like, way more skills than my sorry punk ass ever will, right?
Hey, give me a house with chicken legs, and I'll see where I can go from there.
Yeah. So, bam, she's there. Vasilisa is all pretty much pissing her pinafore. This is scary, right? So she rides up, Baba Yaga rides up to the gate, and she says, little house, stand the way thy mother placed thee. Turn thy back to the forest and thy face to me. And the fucking chicken hut turns to face her and stands still. And then, sniffing the air all around her, Baba Yaga continues with, "Foo, foo, I smell that is Russian. What is here?"
So now we're borrowing from Jack and the Beanstalk.
I mean, kind of. That's...
Fee-fi-fo-fum, right. Foo-foo.
Foo-foo, okay. I smell the blood of a Russian. What is here?
Okay.
Yeah, no, this is, again, this is a mashup of all of them fairy tales. Russia got it all. This is a Russian bootleg of all that Grimm's fairy tale shit. So Vasilisa comes forward, pretty much bows low enough to scrape the ground, introduces herself and says in a shaky voice that she has been sent into the forest to get fire for her stepfamily. Baba Yaga says, "Well, well, I know them, but if I give thee some fire, you must stay with me a while and work for it. If not, I will eat you for my supper."
Yes. Well, I mean, you can't get something for nothing.
Right? I mean, come on, man. So, standard corporate America-style contract, but minus the non-disclosure and non-compete clauses. So, back to the story. So, they enter the hut, and Baba Yaga throws herself down on the couch by the stove and tells Vasilisa, bitch, get in the kitchen and make me a sandwich. So, V pretty much checks the pantry, and there is enough food in there for three strong men. So, she cooks it all, and Baba Yaga promptly scarfs it all down, leaving just a little bit of cabbage soup and a crust of bread for the girl. Nice manners, babe. So all full
she left her something. Yeah, I mean that wasn't something. Part of the deal that we know of.
So all full and sleepy from devouring all that good grub, Baba Yaga says to Vasilisa, listen to me well, and do what I bid thee. Tomorrow, when I drive away, do thou clean the yard, sweep the floors, and cook my supper. Then take a quarter of a measure of wheat from my storehouse and pick out all the black grains and the wild peas. Mind thou dost all that I have bade. If not, thou shalt be eaten for my supper.
Well, who's going to cook it, though?
You know, I don't know that she's thinking ahead. So Baba Yaga then crashes out, begins to snore, and then Vasilisa sneakily removes Malibu Skipper from her pocket, feeds her a wee dram of cabbage soup, and says, oh my god, what the fuck, BBQ, right? What are we going to do now? We're fucking hosed. And the dolls all, do not worry, all will be taken care of. The morning always is wiser than the evening. Go to sleep. So her standard, chill the fuck out, I got this.
Yep.
So Vasilisa is like, right, cool, and just does that.
What I'm really taking away as the moral from the story is a good night's sleep is very important.
Super important.
Right.
I mean, how do you think she's so beautiful? She's well rested. Anyway, Vasilisa goes to sleep and is like, okay, this doll's got it. We got this. So she wakes up the next day, and just before sunrise, she sees the white rider that she'd seen before in the forest gallop to the gate and disappear just like the black rider. And then suddenly, whoop, the sun comes up. And the red rider then does the same thing. And all the glowing skull lights go off. Poof. So you got to conserve that skull electricity, right?
I mean, that is important. Sure. I imagine that's very expensive to keep running.
Yeah, the solar panel on the roof of the chicken legs. It's a problem. So Baba Yaga then goes out into the yard in her sweet mortar and pestle ride and takes off into the forest.
Where does she go during the day?
Safeway? I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. She's running whatever sort of errands an ancient man-eating forest hag does of an afternoon. She's out doing that.
Cursing children.
Sure. Making wells run dry.
Yes.
Plagues, frogs, locusts. Sure. All that shit. Yeah.
Werewolves.
Yeah. Who knows? So she's out doing a thing, and she leaves Vasilisa and Malibu Skipper to their own devices. I bet you can guess what happens next.
She feeds the doll.
She does. And the spooky doll takes care of everything, like a magical enchanted Roomba. And all that's left for Vasilisa to do is basically make supper for the witch from the magical refilling pantry.
Oh, she has a magical refilling pantry.
Yeah.
I want one of those.
I know. I'm like, shit. I mean, seriously, man-eating witch, creepy horseman of the Twilight Apocalypse aside, not so cool. But this is kind of a sweet, sweet living situation.
I don't know. I'm kind of digging the horse yeah, the magic
the metaphors
horse
on horseback. I'm kind of into those dudes. But yeah, so I'm not, I mean, this is not a bad Airbnb situation. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Vasilisa spends the day kind of chillaxing, catching up on her soaps, checking Instagram, whatever. And then Baba Yaga returns home that evening and asks, well, hast thou done perfectly all the tasks I gave thee to do? Or am I to eat thee for my supper? Be so good as to look for thyself, grandmother, answers Vasilisa. And Baba Yaga looks around and is all, son of a bitch! Because it's hut beautiful in there, right? And she's pissed because she really was hoping for a nice dinner of roast pretty young maiden. But what can she do, man? A deal's a deal. So she says,
maybe not make that deal in the first place and just eat her.
Maybe.
I mean, she is a supernatural witch.
But, like, they're really into deals and shit, so I don't know. Anyway, so she says,
like, some kind of incentive off of how many deals they make a year?
I don't know, but it seems like it. Yeah. That's always part of these stories, right?
Maybe that's where she's going, is work.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, so Baba Yaga says, well, thou hast done all well.
And then clapping her bony little hands, she shouts, "Ho, my faithful servants, friends of my heart, haste and grind my wheat." And immediately, three pairs of disembodied hands appeared, grabbed the wheat that Basilisk's doll had winnowed for her, and whisked it away. So, because I'm a weirdo, I envision these hands as like the big, talking, animated hamburger helper glove mascot. But, like, I expect, right? But, like, in real life, they're probably more like a whole family from, of like, they're like Things family from the Addams Family.
That's what I was thinking of. It's like, except I see them as grayer and dirtier and grosser.
Oh, no, dude. Hamburger helper mitt.
With creepy nails. But, no, now I can see nothing yep. but hamburger helper mitt.
Fucked
yeah.
up for you.
Thank you. Thank You're you for that. Welcome. That was perfect.
I swear we're close to the end. I swear we're getting there. So then Baba Yaga sits down, scarf the enormous feast Basilisk's made for her, and then after finishing and, like, I don't know, burping a few bars of Tchaikovsky, she says, "Tomorrow, do as thou hast done today, and besides these tasks from my storehouse, a half measure of poppy seeds. Take them and clean them one by one. Someone has mixed earth with them to do me a mischief, and to anger me, and I will have them made perfectly clean."
So, shout out to whoever has the balls to mix earth in with this chick's poppy
right?
seeds.
That takes some real fortitude. Mm-hmm. And then Baba Yaga promptly falls asleep. So, pretty much, like, it's lather,
rinse, repeat. So, wait a minute. You're telling me she just fucked this pretty chick, ate her food, and fell asleep? That doesn't sound familiar at all.
Yeah. So, again, tomorrow it's basically lather, rinse, repeat, because we don't have all day here. And Magic Doll does everything perfectly while Baba Yaga's out at Safeway, getting her hair did, whatever she's doing. And then, of course, Baba Yaga returns, pissed as hell that things are as demanded, wolfs down an enormous dinner, conjures up the creepy disembodied hamburger helper hand friends, take care of the poppy seeds. But then afterwards, instead of just demanding more fucking chores, and then drifting off to Nana Land, Baba Yaga snaps at Vasilisa. "Fail! Why dost thou say nothing, but stand there as if thou wast dumb?" Basically, talk, bitch.
Yeah, now you must make conversation
yep.
with me.
Now you gotta chit-chat. So Vasilisa's all, "Well, I spoke not because I dared not, but if you want a conversation here, would it be cool if I asked a couple of questions?" Baba Yaga's all, "Well," looking all crafty and shit, "well, remember that not every question leads to good. If thou knowest overmuch, thou wilt grow old too soon. What wilt thou ask?"
Ew.
Yeah, that's creepy.
That's also a great way to tell young, impressionable girls listening to this story, don't know too much. You'll get old and dumb. Stay dumb. You'll stay pretty.
Right? So this is, ignorance is bliss, bitch. But Vasilisa, who's been kind of primed for this by Malibu Skipper, knows what to ask. So she inquires who the rider in white was, and Baba Yaga tells her that he is White Bright Day, and that he's a servant of the witch, and he cannot harm Vasilisa. And then that prompts Vasilisa to ask yet another question. She then inquires about the Red Rider, and Baba Yaga says, well, that's her servant Round Red Sun, who also cannot be of harm to Vasilisa. And then, growing crabbier still, bids Vasilisa ask her yet more. So, to the surprise of zero people who are listening to this tale, which I swear to God, guys, is almost over, Vasilisa asks about the Man in Black, who Baba Yaga says is Johnny Cash. No, I'm totally kidding. It's the Black Dark Knight. No, not Batman. No K on the Knight there. And also her servant, and also totally fucking harmless. And then, getting even more pissed off, Baba Yaga asks, is all, ask me more, which I envision her saying, like a Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction saying, say what again, I dare you, because that's where we're at right now. And Vasilisa is all, hey, I fold. I just wanted to know those three things. That's all I wanted. So we're good. And Bob Yaga's all, damn, check out the big brain on Vasilisa, because if you'd asked me one more goddamn question about my three hamburger helper hands, then they'd have appeared and ripped you into goddamn tiny pieces.
Wow.
Wow. So now it's my turn to ask you a question, says Baba Yaga. How did you manage all of my impossible tasks so very well? And Vasilisa, figuring correctly that telling her about the doll was a bad fucking idea, simply said, the blessing of my dead mother helps me. Whereupon Baba Yaga flies into a crazy-ass rage at this statement, saying, get thee out of my house this instant! I want no one who bears a blessing to cross my threshold. So, like, totally Voldemort versus Lily Potter's dying love.
Wow.
Yep. And as Vasilisa is hustling like mad out of the chicken hut, Baba Yaga grabs one of the magical creepy skull lamps and throws it at Vasilisa as she's retreating, saying, here is the fire for your stepfamily. May they have joy of it. Foreshadowing.
Ooh. Very creepy.
So we're coming to the very end here.
Very creepy.
Anyway, she gets the skull, runs like Usain Bolt through the forest, gets back to her stepfamily's house. Meanwhile, during Vasilisa's absence, the shitty stepfamily have been completely unable to strike a light anywhere in the house and are at this point kind of frantic because, like, the power has basically been out for days, and they're kind of happy, honestly, to see Vasilisa when she shows up with the glowing-eyed skull. So shitty stepmom's like, hey, maybe this'll work, places the skull atop the best candlestick that they own in the center of the parlor table, and waits to see what's going to happen. Just like at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, suddenly the skull begins to glow with a righteous fury and straight up melts the fuck out of stepmom and both stepsisters.
Wow.
Yup, vengeance is mine, saith the Baba Yaga.
Wow.
Vasilisa then nopes the fuck out of that cottage of horrors and moves in with an old woman who has no children back in the village proper. And things actually went pretty cool from here on out. So basically the quick denouement of this is bored out of her mind because the nice old woman that she moved in with didn't have murder forest chores for her to do.
Yeah, I mean, she only had regular chores to
right?
do.
She was like, just chill out, man, it's cool. Vasilisa, with the help of Malibu Skipper, sets about basically making the finest, fanciest flax cloth of all time. Because, again, we didn't have Netflix or, like, mm-hmm. you could
spin. You had one thing.
Yeah, you could make flax, I guess. So, anyway, this shit is so much nicer than anything you can buy at Joanne Fabrics. Like, it's supreme. And eventually, the old woman is like, damn, that is some fine-ass flax cloth fit for nobody but the Tsar himself. So she wanders over to the palace with it and delivers it to the Tsar. It's like, here is our tribute, some beautiful flax cloth. The Tsar is like super pleased with this fine ass flax cloth and orders a bunch of shirts to be made from it. But the problem is, it's so fancy and so fine that none of his tailors can sew it. So he sends for the old woman and says, hey, like, you made this cloth, can you sew it? And she's like, well, I didn't quite exactly make it myself, but I know who did, and I'm going to take the cloth back to her so she can make you some real fancy-ass, super-fine, rad shirts. Which she does. And then she delivers these luxury shirts back to the Tsar, who's so smitten with these damn shirts, right, that he's all, I have to meet your tailor. And so he does, and he's like, damn, girl, you are beautiful and crafty and handy and good at, like, flax and shit, so let's get married.
Well, I mean, in that time, it was a very popular skill.
Sure.
Yes.
Flax.
It puts you
wow.
top of the list. Yeah. Like, now we have football, then they had flax.
Right? So she's like, okay, totes sounds like a plan, and thus becomes Tsarina of all of Russia. Her dad finally returns from wherever the fuck he was doing merchant shit.
Yeah, that was a long fucking trip.
Right? Well, I mean, they didn't really have... He didn't have a mortar and pestle. He just had, like, a boat
True.
And shit. And he... She moves him and her nice adoptive old grandmother lady into the palace, the Tsar's palace as well, where everyone lives happily ever after, including Malibu Skipper, who gets some seriously swanky, like, palace food, like caviar and, like, really good rye bread and shit to eat instead of her usual random crusts of bread and kvass. The end.
Do we know if she passed the doll down to her daughter?
Maybe. I mean, I assume so.
I would hope so.
I would hope so, too.
That would mean that that doll is out there somewhere today.
But we've now, you know, eaten our crust of bread. We've drunk our bikvas. We've bested Baba Yaga.
We have.
Yeah.
And we have come to the end of our tale on our episode today, folks. So.
Which probably is going to use so much editing because, Jesus Christ, this thing was long.
So on that note, take care of each other.
Drink your bikvas, eat your crusts of bread.
And remember, you might be disturbed, but
you're not alone, nor are you in Baba Yaga's freaky chicken hut.
Thanks for listening, folks. Please remember to hit like, subscribe, and review. If you would like to send us an email, whether it is a picture of a wizard van or not, then you can do so at disturbinginterest@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook at The Disturbing Interest Podcast, on Twitter at podcast_DI, or on Instagram at DI Podcast. You can also follow Neko at Neko the Podcat. Find us on our website, disturbinginterest.com, or you can send us creepy things and pictures of artwork, including wizard bands, at P.O. Box 70515, Seattle, Washington, 98127. Stay disturbed, friends. We'll talk at you soon.